From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. At one level, it's a very old story playing out in Oregon in the last few days of struggle over land and power. At another, there's something new, an emboldened, armed, self-described militia challenging federal authority after they won at that in 2014 with Cliven Bundy in Nevada. This hour on Point, this land is whose land? The armed protesters in Oregon, what's right, and who's in charge? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What is playing out here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Burns, Oregon, is Les Zeitz. He's a senior investigative reporter for The Oregonian. He's been leading the newspaper's coverage of the armed protesters occupying the buildings there at the National Wildlife Refuge outside Burns. Les Zeitz, thanks very much for being with us today.
Happy to join you, Tom.
So we know this is not set in stone here, but at this moment, are they still there at the refuge, and does it appear they plan on staying or going?
Well, they are still there as far as we know. We've got a crew headed back out there. They're about 30 miles out in the desert from the little town of Burns, which has a population of about 2,000. But by all indications, they're still there, and they don't plan on leaving anytime soon.
What's their demand? What's their ask?
Well, that's the odd thing about it, Tom, is that they really haven't made a demand. What they've been telling the public in their daily press conferences is that they're occupying the refuge, that they are going to initiate a process to return federal land to private ownership. And they talk about adjudicating claims from area ranchers. And it's almost like they're going to run their own government land office out there.
Certainly the local sheriff had that perspective. The Harney County Sheriff, this is David Ward, and I'm sure you saw this, but he put out a statement on Sunday. He said, these men came to Harney County claiming to be part of militia groups supporting local ranchers, when in reality, the sheriff said, these men had alternative motives to attempt to overthrow the county and federal government in hopes to spark a movement across the United States. Is the sheriff smoking something, or is that somewhere in the minds of the guys out at the refuge?
Well, you know, we're not sure what Sheriff Ward is referring to with those statements. The militants out there in control of the refuge have not made that sort of a direct statement, at least not that I've heard. You know, they do want to get the federal government off the land and out of Harney County. They do want government to be more responsive to the people, but they've not made any specific demand that the Harney County government or the federal government just disband. They've been more general about it and more about constitutional rights and property rights.
There are two sons of Cliven Bundy who are there, Eamon and Ryan Bundy. What roles are they playing, Les?
Well, actually, there's three of them.
Three,
Bundy,
excuse me.
Boys there.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Bundy is there as well.
Mel, okay.
Eamon is clearly in the lead on this and has been for at least a month when he made contact with the local ranching family, the Hammond family, which is at the core of this entire controversy. So Eamon's been in charge. Mel and Ryan appear to be playing supporting roles out at the refuge. Ryan was quoted by the local public radio last night as saying that if the people here don't want us, then we're going to go home. But I talked to two militant leaders after that comment was reported. I talked to leaders out at the refuge, and they knew of no such plan or promise, and it makes no sense that they would just pack up their suitcases and go home because people don't like them.
Eamon Bundy and others have been putting out the word saying, come and join us, come and join us. Of course, the Bundys effectively succeeded in 2014 when lots of armed allies gathered around them in their standoff with the federal government over monies due for their grazing in Nevada, and the feds eventually backed down. Are people rallying? Are they gathering? Do others have access to the refuge, or is it sealed off?
No, it is not sealed off. There is no police presence between Burns and the refuge. These people can come and go at will. Their supporters out at the refuge are coming and going on grocery runs to town. The press can come and go out there. Anybody can come and go, for that matter. So they're not. It's not like they are in sort of a face-to-face standoff with law enforcement. They are just they're occupying the ground.
But do you see a rallying of others to their side? Are their pickup trucks headed in there full of armed guys?
No. In fact, you will see very few. You see little sign of weaponry out there. In a couple hours that I was out there with roaming around the entire compound, I saw only one militant with a sidearm holstered to his hip. Otherwise, there was no sign of weapons. As far as additional supporters, they've been making that call almost on a daily basis for several days, and there does not seem to be a rally to their cause. Quite the contrary, formal paramilitia groups around the West and even at the national level have been issuing statements saying they do not endorse this tactic. So I think Bundy and his cohorts out there are on a bit of an ideological island.
They may have overplayed their hand this time.
Well, it depends on what their true motives are. Look, at the face of it, it makes no sense to occupy empty federal headquarters buildings out in the desert of Southeast Oregon to make your point. So no one can really understand what the strategy is here, and you know they do have a reason and a motive for being there, and it just isn't apparent yet.
I don't know how deeply you've read into the other groups, right-wing groups that have not gone along with their strategy, but what's the dissent from what Bundy's are calling for? Are they just unpopular now? I mean, they seemed quite popular last time in Nevada.
Well, yeah, they were, and I think the point is, at least the militia here, believe that they had made their point with the big rally in Burns on Saturday on behalf of these ranchers. It was peaceful. It was well covered by the media. It was supported by the local community. And then this surprise occupation has completely obliterated whatever goodwill they might have generated for their cause and among the people in this community. So the militia folks who have stepped back from Bundy, I think they endorse the concept, they just don't endorse the tactic.
Les Zeitz, a senior investigative reporter for The Oregonian, with us from Burns in Oregon today. Les, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate your joining us.
I appreciate being with you, Tom.
I want to turn to Hermiston County, or at Hermiston, Oregon right now, and Dave Duquette. He's a rancher, horse trainer. He was at the weekend protest in Harney County. He's a member of a group called Protect the Harvest. They want the lasting legal safeguards for farmers and ranchers and hunters and fishermen and animal owners. We'll ask him about that. Dave Duquette, thanks very much for being with us today.
You bet, Tom.
You have
thanks
been
for having me.
Oh, it's good to have you, and I appreciate your taking the time. You've been supportive of Dwight and Stephen Hammond. This is the father and son, 73 and 46, who both, I guess, reported for new prison terms in California yesterday. Why have you been supportive of them in their standoff with the government, Dave?
Well, I deal with a lot of issues like this, where the government overreach or they're trying to put ranchers and farmers, whether through EPA or whether through the BLM or any of these sorts of organizations within the government. If I deal with several different cases, and this one is probably one the most sickening case of government coming in and trying to run somebody off their land. And there has been worse ones. There's the Dan sisters. There's Wayne Hage, people like that. There's several big cases that over the years didn't get near the notoriety that this one's getting.
Well, explain that to us, Dave Duquette. The Hammonds are ranchers. Their land abuts federal land. You say the federal government wants to run them off their land. Why would they want to do that? The federal government has half of Oregon already. They have a lot of land there. Why would they want to run the Hammonds off?
For over 25 years, the federal government has wanted the ground. Now let me put some perspective on why these folks are the Bundys are out there at that wildlife refuge specifically.
Yeah.
And that is that the Hammonds Ranch abuts that wildlife refuge.
And this is a huge refuge, almost 200,000 acres, the biggest bird sanctuary, one of them in the country there.
Right. And what's interesting is Hammonds actually helped write the whole scenario, put it together for that sanctuary to be there. and were proponents of it at one time.
But hasn't it been there since 1908 or something? I mean, it didn't show up yesterday.
No, but they had to redo a lot of that.
Okay.
I think it was in the 70s and 80s that he helped out with that. But my point there is that that ground, their ranch abuts that refuge and goes up over the Steen Mountains.
Okay.
The government wants that piece of ground and has been trying to buy that from the Hammonds for years, or get them out of there, figure a way to get them out of there. And there's a lot more to this story than what's being told. And, you know, one of the main things that a lot of the people haven't gotten right in the reporting on this, and you see it backing off now, is they talk about the poaching ring and all that, with the deer slaughter and things that were going on there. That was kicked out of the first case. The judge, they proved that it was physically impossible for what they said happened to happen. And they also found that the hunters, that the disgruntled guy that used to have the hunting rights out there had out there that day, and they were not chased off by fire. They left because they filled their tags. They left early because they filled their tags.
Of course, the charge here is of arson on burning a federal ground there. And I want to come back and look at that and a lot more here. Can you stick with us for a couple minutes, Dave? We have to take a short break here.
You bet.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the armed takeover in Oregon of the sort of reception center headquarters for big wildlife, national, federal wildlife refuge there by Bundys and more, and the hot politics of what is going on there outside of Burns, Oregon. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Is there a legitimate grievance here? The federal government not paying attention to what people need? Or is this bigger than land use? Is this a kind of call to rebellion? Ranchers, what do you see here? Dave Duquette is with us from Hermiston, Oregon. Rancher, horse trainer there, sympathetic with the Hammonds, the ranchers who are headed back to prison after their conflict with the federal government over land use. From Facebook on Sunday, Emin Bundy, the leader of the protesters there who've taken over the wildlife refuge, explained that he said that what he's found talking with ranchers in the state.
We've been able to see that these ranchers truly have been in a situation that is really a form of tyranny, and how their lands and their resources and their livelihoods have been basically at the will of a federal agent.
So there's a local grievance he's citing here, but you can hear, as he spoke with reporters on Monday at the refuge, a kind of bigger agenda as well, sort of national agenda. Here's Bundy again.
We feel that we have exhausted all prudent measures and have been ignored. And it has been left to us to decide whether we allow these things to go on or whether we make a stand so they will not happen to other people across this country, so they will not come into our homes and take away our rights.
Kind of a general call there from Bundy out on the refuge. The local sheriff, Harney County Sheriff David Ward, said it's time for these guys to go home.
I want to talk directly to the people at the wildlife refuge. You said you were here to help the citizens of Harney County. That help ended when a peaceful protest became an armed occupation. The Hammonds have turned themselves in. It's time for you to leave our community, go home to your families, and end this peacefully.
Dave Duquette in Hermiston, Oregon, you're a rancher out there. Is it time for them to put down the guns, walk out, go home?
Well, I was just so you know, when I found out they did what they did after the rally.
You mean go out and take over the refuge headquarters?
Yeah, exactly. And when I figured that out, I was very disappointed. I felt like they hijacked the peaceful rally, the good rally that we did. So I was right there with everybody a lot of people being upset about it. And the Idaho 3%ers were upset. The group that organized the rally, we were all fairly upset that they were going about this in the wrong manner, because there was some strong things that were said right away about, you know, they were going to die out there if people came out there, and there was a lot of rhetoric that went on with that first flash of getting excited, whatever you want to call it, going out there. Well, now Amon's figured out a way to get things under control there with the people's mouths and their rhetoric, and it's a lot. People have asked me many times in the last couple of days, do I support what they're doing? I support the theory of what they're doing. I don't support how they did it, but I also support I can tell you that Hammonds would not have gotten on every front page news, you know, their story. It would cost millions to get that out to as many people as it's out to right now. So if Hammond Bundy walked away right now unscathed, he would have done his job. He would have done what he came to do. And in that clip that you said, or you talked about, when he said they've exhausted all their resources, Amon, I think, was talking right there, and the way I took that was he was talking about the fact that legally they exhausted everything they could to try to stop, to Hammonds did, to try to stop this travesty. And it is a travesty what's going on.
Well, I mean, I hear what you're saying. At the same time, he's talking about people across this country, Amon Bundy said, making a stand so they, I guess, federal government will not come into our homes and take away our rights. What do you say to people who may be far from you there in Herbison, Oregon this morning, listening and thinking, come on, this is federal land. This belongs to all the people of the United States. Amon Bundy doesn't have a special claim on it, and neither, even though they live next to it, do Dwight and Stephen Hammond. It's everybody's land.
You're right. But how else did they get, you know, the federal government tried to say that Cliven Bundy's ground was, he had no right to any of that ground, too.
Well, they said he should pay for his grazing rights. That sounds reasonable to an outsider.
It does. In a lot of ways, it does. But if you go back and look at the history of Nevada, and that's where all the state's rights issues come into. And if you look at the bills that have been passed in many western states, they've all tried to take back their land. Utah, Nevada, Oregon, several different states have tried and passed bills actually to take back their land from the government.
Dave Duquette, I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today there from Hermiston, Oregon, with the group Protect the Harvest. It's good to get your perspective, and I thank you for it.
You bet.
Let's go to Walla Walla, Washington. Phil Brick joins us, professor of political science at Whitman College in Washington, studies public land issues in the West, politics of ranching, environmental politics. Professor Brick, Phil Brick, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And I want to welcome as well from Durham, North Carolina, other side of the country, David Schanzer. He's director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University. A lot of experience in thinking about how to deal with folks when they take up the gun. Dave Schanzer, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Phil, you're close to this there in Walla Walla. What do you see unfolding here? The whole country is watching and trying to figure this out. Who's right? Who's wrong? What's outrageous? What's not?
What we're really seeing here, Tom, I think is an old story and a repeating story. It kind of comes up when Democrats are in office and hold the administrative branch of the federal government. And as Dave Duquette said, there's an idea to take back the land from the federal government. And much of this is sort of motivated by sort of what they see, what ranchers see as increasing regulations on their operations, which makes it more difficult. I think the larger context here is that ranching is becoming much more difficult out on these marginal lands. They have falling commodity prices. There's a consolidation in the meatpacking industry. There's climate change, which makes it hotter and drier in the West. And then there's environmental regulation, which tends to increase worry among ranchers and others when Democrats are in office in Washington, D.C.
But with that, do you mean to suggest that, in your view, the Hammonds, this ranching family, have been treated unjustly?
Well, they were convicted of arson, and, you know, the circumstances of that I'm not exactly clear on. But, you know, their ranch abuts federal land, and they started fires. One is a back burn, apparently, but there was a burn ban in effect. They were convicted of arson. What I think is maybe a little excessive is the use of anti-terrorism laws. I mean, interpretation of that as a political act, because they have been involved in controversies with the BLM for longer sentences, up to 5 years.
We should explain the Bureau of Land Management and anti-terrorism, because after, what, the Oklahoma bombings, you had some very tough laws come in, and 5-year minimum sentence for arson if it was charged under these rules. Dave Sanzer, this gets us into your territory. The Hammonds said they didn't intend to burn federal property, but they did have, there was testimony from a younger member of the family who said that the grandfather there had said, go out and, you know, drop matches, burn it all down. Has the federal government handled this prosecution appropriately? One judge earlier said no and refused to give them the 5-year sentence. That is what has been recently overturned and so controversial, and they headed into prison yesterday for years. Does it look like it's been handled well, Dave?
Well, I think the bottom line when you talk about these issues is that, you know, we're a country of rule of law, and the Hammonds had all their appeal rights to challenge those issues. They lost, and actually they're doing what you do in a country with rule of law, which was ultimately to surrender once your appeals were exhausted. What the folks on the wildlife range are essentially trying to say is, well, we tried normal politics, but that didn't work, so we're going to take matters into our own hands.
You're talking about the Bundys and their allies there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And they're going outside politics and using not violence but force in some regard to try to get a different political result. And that's essentially the essence of these kind of violent political movements, is that they reject politics and try to use other means to achieve their objectives.
I wonder if you see this as local or as somehow a megaphone to a bigger national audience. I mean, even with the Hammonds, Dwight Hammond, who's the older Hammond involved here, after the march to their home on Saturday, he came out and addressed the crowd. They're all carrying American flags and walking through the streets, a lot of cowboy hats. It's cold. It's winter. And listen to what he had to say to that crowd there in Burns, Oregon.
Appreciate all you people being here, but it's not about me. It's about America. And somehow we got to get the wheels back on this wagon because they're flying off.
Phil Brick, what's he talking about there?
I think he's expressing a larger frustration that's common in the ranching community with having to deal with the Bureau of Land Management, a federal bureaucratic organization, where it's basically rule governed and procedure governed. Most ranches out in the West are typically relatively small compared to of deeded land, that's private land, compared to the larger public permit system, which where they are allowed to graze their cattle and they have to pay permit fees. Cliven Bundy refused to pay permit fees after the desert tortoise was listed, and he was asked or required, I should say, to reduce the number of cattle on his property, on his grazing allotment on public land.
The desert tortoise listed as an endangered species there.
Threatened species,
mm-hmm,
correct.
Mm-hmm.
So much of this has to do with a sense of frustration with having to deal with a federal bureaucracy, which is admittedly not always easy. But, you know, these are public lands, as you said earlier, and they belong to the federal government. The other thing that, and the American people, the other thing that you mentioned earlier I thought was interesting is that there are really, many uses for public lands, and it belonged to all the people. The Bureau of Land Management, since the Clinton administration and Bruce Babbitt's reforms, has really transformed itself from what we call an agency captured by ranchers to an agency with a true multiple-use mandate, including recreation, wildlife, and logging, grazing, and mining as well. The Bundys really want to push the use of public lands toward the logging, ranching, and mining. It comes from a sort of agrarianism and a sort of long tradition of rural radicalism around sort of the righteousness of that agrarianism.
With an interesting national echo right now somehow in politics in the age of Trump and more. I want to go to our listeners. Pocatello, Idaho. Catherine is calling. Catherine, thank you for calling. You're on the air. What do you see?
Excuse me. Well, you're welcome. But all the things these people have said are so, they're true. They're true. But having had personal experience with people who work for the Forest Service, BLM people, fish and game people, they are all concerned about the protection of the land and of the plants and animals that exist upon that land. And
good.
That land belongs to all of us. It just doesn't belong to the government. The government holds it for all people in this country. So here in Idaho, as in Oregon, and as in Nevada also, there are people who look at that land and say, whoa, wait a minute, I should have that land. But can we count on those people to protect the things, whether it's the desert tortoises or whether it's anything, the trees, for example. And so people, there are people who think that, gee, that land is not being used, ergo, I should have it. But there are lots of people in this part of the country, you don't see it in the East, but you see it here, that think, whoa, wait a minute, the feds shouldn't have that land, they're just bossy people. Well, piffle, they're not bossy, they're trying to protect the land. And if it belongs to all of us, we should all be able to enjoy it. And there are people who use those lands for grazing, and they do an excellent job of keeping their cattle where they're supposed to be and not overgrazing. But there are others who say, whoa, wait a minute, this land is free. By golly, I can just do whatever I want to with it. And just one other thing, and that is these people often turn to the Constitution as if it were a biblical piece of information. And what I believe they should do is turn to their own integrity and their own caring about whatever it is they do, whether it's the trees, whether it's the cows, whatever. And they should be more protective of that, of any land that they make use of, so that it becomes a personal integrity situation rather than, by golly, we're going to get those feds out of there. And the reason right now the feds are not doing very much, I believe, is because they don't want to have another Ruby Ridge where people got killed. And they don't want to get into a big hassle. They want to quietly help people understand that you can't just boss the federal government as you can't boss everybody else who lives in this country, because that's what the federal government stands for.
Catherine, so. Catherine, you're great. What would you say to Cliven or Eamon Bundy if you could speak to him right now?
Well, I would say go home, look at your cattle, and when you're taking your cow-calf numbers out into the federal lands, don't try to have a cow-calf and then another calf dragging along so you end up with three animals instead of the potential two. And remember that these lands, that you're being given the privilege of protecting those lands because population grows. Hey, and there's going to come a time when people are going to say, I don't want to go to a zoo to see a desert tortoise. I don't want to go to a zoo to see a cougar. I don't want to have to go to a zoo. I want to be able to go out and enjoy what we have in a free way.
Captain, we're up against a break right here, but I so appreciate your call from Pocatello, Idaho. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the armed takeover in Oregon by Bundys and more of federal facilities and the hot politics of what is going on out there. David Schanzer joins us. He's director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University. He's paid a lot of attention to violence and the threat of violence in politics and beyond, in this country and beyond. Phil Brick joins us from Walla Walla, Washington, professor of political science at Whitman College in Washington. He pays a lot of attention to public land issues in the American West, politics of ranching, environmental politics. You can join us here. What should the federal government do here? Was it a mistake to back down in the face of the Bundy's guns almost 2 years ago now, in 2014? Was it a mistake to go so hard on the Hammonds, the ranchers outside of Burns, Oregon? Phil, Dave, lots of response here online. Here, one listener says, our culture has deteriorated to the point where anyone can do anything they want because they think it's their right. I want $1 million. I want $100 million right now, so someone better give it to me. Now I'm going to go get my gun. Judy says, why are we allowing this to happen? I can't help thinking of John Crawford shot to death in a Walmart holding a toy rifle, or Tamir Rice shot to death with a toy gun without even a warning. Here, a posse of armed white guys, though, occupy federal land, and we just let it happen. This only emboldens them. Dave Schanzer, these dynamics are what you study. I mean, I try to picture if it were African Americans armed taking over a federal building in Baltimore, what the response might look like. Is that unfair to raise here?
I think it's fair to raise, but I agree and disagree with that critique. You know, if you remember the Occupy movements from a number of years ago, people were allowed to, you know, stay on public property in different cities. Some people stayed there for a matter of months. Ultimately, they were forced to leave. But we have to try to find the sweet spot between allowing
they were not gun-toting, I must point out.
Well, they were, but these guys
they
are,
were not.
Right, but they were also in the middle of dense urban areas. Mm-hmm. They were taking up property that was property for all the people, public parks and the like. These folks are really in the middle of nowhere. No violence has occurred yet. So I see more of a parallel between that. I think the protest should be allowed to play out. These individuals should leave, and I think ultimately they will lose interest, especially once CNN leaves the premises, and hopefully it will resolve itself peacefully. That said, I think it's very important that if there were federal laws violated, that either civilly or criminally, they need to be enforced. And so I very much think that a mistake was made by allowing Clive Bundy's grazing fees to go uncollected. I'm told there's over $1 million. The federal government does have ways to, as we all of us taxpayers know, to collect money that is owed. And I think for the fairness issues that you raised and some of the people on the mm-hmm. social media have raised, mm-hmm. for fairness issues, those laws have to be enforced, and they should be against the people who are out at the National Refuge as well.
Daniel in Somerville, Massachusetts. Daniel, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. First of all, I wanted to say that the eloquent Catherine, your caller, recently said everything I wanted to say except for one major point.
Okay.
I think that the entire term of militia is the wrong term. It's a matter of semantics, but I think it's an important one. This was used with the Bundys a couple of years ago, and the term basically, historically, meant something from colonial days, and it was a group of soldiers, citizen soldiers, who went along with the government. And nowadays, the fourth or fifth meaning in the dictionary might go along with the Bundys. But I think it's used with whites. And if blacks or Indians had the same action, it would be domestic terrorists.
General, let me take your point and just respond in this way. I want to just be very clear about this. The word militia was used by those out at the refuge themselves. And I can't speak for all news organizations, but I know with NPR, they've explicitly said we're not using that. Well, you can call it self-described because these guys have used that word, but it's not being used as a generic term for those out at the wildlife refuge. But I take your point, and it has a certain suggestion to it. I interrupted you, Daniel.
Well, I think the word militia sounds patriotic. And a lot of the people who are using it think of themselves as patriots and also think of the government as an evil operation, and everything that they demand is tyranny. or lots of things that they demand. And I'm not completely against the thought that the federal government can do things in a way that is beyond their logical boundaries. My own father, Sidney Gewirtz, my late father, lost his business to a kind of ecological detail for his electric plating company some years ago. So I know about things like that.
Yep.
But the government is not the enemy, and the militia people are not the patriots. And I think the word militia just squirrels it into that territory.
I appreciate your call, Daniel. Phil Brick, there does seem to me to be that effort that Daniel points out to associate this group to associate themselves with patriotism and more than a dog whistle to supporters around the country to come out and support them there in Oregon or to sort of take up the same posture wherever they might be.
Well, if that's what they're doing, it's not really working. This isn't the first time that the Bundys have tried to intervene and insert themselves into a number of different federal land conflicts. In kind of coming off their Gold Butte, Bunkerville success in 2014, a little bit later, they went to Utah and encouraged folks to come out to a place called Recapture Canyon to support the use of motorized vehicles against the BLM banning it because of archaeological resources. That ended in a couple of convictions. I don't really see a lot of people in Harney County either supporting them, maybe because 50% of people who live in Harney County work for the government. And they explicitly said that, hey, you know, government sort of civic relations are actually pretty good in Harney County. Mainly because people work for the BLM, and it's one of the few good jobs that are in the area, which is not economically thriving.
You know, the first judge who looked at the Hammonds case said it was just too much, that the terror law under which they were sentenced, I guess, over this arson claim and the five-year minimum imprisonment was too much and declined. Now that was remanded, and they're in California now, I guess, to serve it. But is the wrong law being applied here somehow, Phil?
In my opinion, it is. I think it's a little excessive for the Hammonds. I mean, anytime there's a political motivation in any kind of act of violence, and arson is a form of violence, it's possible. But I don't see it as domestic terrorism. I see it as arson. And, you know, going back to 2003, there was the Earth Liberation Front, and a couple people burned, I think, 20 or so Humvee vehicles in West Covina, California.
These were environmentalists.
Environmentalists, that's right. And they were, I believe, convicted under the anti-terrorism laws. You know, that caused $1 million in property damage, and they scrawled all sorts of sort of political slogans on the SUVs that they didn't burn. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a fine line. Two judges saw it differently. I mean, I think reasonable people can disagree on this.
The first judge was not the last word. Michael Hogan said it was a sentence which would shock the conscience, but that was the law, and they're headed off to prison. Aaron in Springboro, Ohio. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I'm aching to feel the immediacy of these issues. You know, I share geographical detachment with Catherine and Daniel, and I'm very much a conservationist, and I'm looking for the ag community's answer to these questions. I want to know, how is what you're doing different from the electroplating company and their business expenses? If you want to use federal land, which I cough up taxes for every year, and I hope that the feds are managing it correctly, how is it that these ag proponents out in the West can say, well, no, it's our land. We want it back. It was never yours. When Manifest Destiny played out and the states were established, there was a lot of federal land that was never given to the states. It was never anybody's. It was never the states. It was never the ranchers. So tell me why you are so wedded to the land, you have so confused your sense of your own personal values with this resource that you use as a business asset, that I, as a taxpayer, should now say, you know what, you're welcome to it. You really do have a right to it that I didn't understand before.
Aaron, let us pick that up. I think Phil Brick has thought about that. Phil, is there a special pleading or a special presumption here? Or, I mean, Aaron's point of reference is that first it was the government's. Well, that's not the way everybody always looked at it. But what about his...
No, he's right. I mean, there's a lot of rhetoric, and there's actually, you know, voting in state legislatures in Utah and Nevada to quote, give the federal land back to the states. Well, he's right that the states never got the land. Each state, when it became from a territory, became mm-hmm. and became a state, made its own bargain with the federal government. Utah made a different bargain and better bargain, quite frankly, than Utah did. I'm sorry, than Nevada did. So he's right about that. But I think what we're looking at is a very small minority. Most in the ranching community do not, in the agrarian community, do not support. What the Bunnies are trying to do. They pay their grazing fees on time. Clive and Bunny owes $1 million in back grazing fees. In Oregon, about 18,000 in back fees are owed. Nationwide, about 200,000.
So wow. So the Bunnies are real outliers.
Context there. He's a real outlier, and he's seen by, and he's been, he's not supported in among cattlemen's associations and so forth. So
What's the political view or presumption embedded in the Bundy view of the world then that's at work here, Phil?
I think it's as I mentioned before, it's a kind of an agrarianism, and the belief that sort of all wealth kind of comes from the ground, and there's a certain virtue in working with the land, a certain primacy in working with the land that sort of bestows virtue on the person that works with the land. And I think there is a sense of righteousness that comes from that. But there are certainly ranchers who work the land. They feel very strongly about the land. Many, in fact, most take very good care of the land. But again, as you said, there are outliers.
Katie in Franklin, Tennessee. Katie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. It would be nice to see you be a leader and not use words like militia and make these bigger causes for what they represent, because I do think they are a very small minority. So I just want to make that point. I love
Fair enough. Self-described. It's not my word for them, but it is theirs for themselves. But
I know, and that's exactly what they want. So let's just pay attention to that.
Okay.
But anyway, I do personally, I live in Tennessee. However, I've had a unique perspective. I've lived in Wyoming. I have family in Montana, Wyoming. I've lived in several places around the country to get a unique view. I have friends who are ranchers, and I do think the previous callers and what the gentleman just said is correct. Most people do live by the law. That's how we have to work hand in hand with politics and with the government. If laws are extreme, maybe in the case of this, for the Hammonds, we have to work with our political leaders, and we have since the beginning of our country, to change those laws if they are bad. Now, the constitutional end of things for the Bundys, when they claim they're constitutionalists or whatever, you know, the truth is, a ragtag army of Americans stood behind Washington. We had to stand, and they would not have done that probably if they knew that they weren't standing behind someone who was of influence and educated, and who had other people in their circle that were also educated. So we can't just, this sort of, you know, exhausting all resources, it's just not true. There, you have to go hand in hand with the political leaders and become one yourself. Look at the Turner family, Triangle X, in Moose, Wyoming, Alan Simpson. These guys were all born ranchers and with the land, but they rose up to become educated. You know, not all of us can go to college, but the truth is we can still learn. So I think this Bundy situation is totally extreme, does not represent the views of most people that do live by the land. It's not to say that it's not complicated issues in the BLM. It's very complex. So anyway, those are my points.
Katie, I really appreciate your call. Let me get one more, if I may, from federal land territory. Edmond, Oklahoma. Richard, you're on. Our time is short. Richard, what do you see?
Well, I just want to comment that I'm a farmer and also a former law enforcement officer, but mm-hmm. I got the high bid on cutting hay on Army Corps of Engineers land, and I had to sign a contract, and I had to pay, give them a check for the high bid. So, you know, if you're going to make a contract and you're going to lease this land from the federal government, then you should have to abide by that contract and pay whatever you do.
it can seem pretty straightforward from that angle, and I hope you got a good hay crop off of that land, Richard, and I appreciate your call. Phil, do you see this as a rising element in the American West, or are we seeing it top out, peter out here, outside of Burns, Oregon?
It's hard to say. Like I said, this is a cyclical movement. It kind of comes up. It's kind of like something that sort of pops up every now and then and goes away. The Bundys, I'm not sure how this will play out, but my guess is for them it won't play out well. I think a lot of people do realize that their claims don't make a lot of sense in the context of the law, and I don't see a lot of sympathy for them. If they hoped that this would sort of spark a national uprising, I think they're sadly misguided. But what I think is a larger trend is sort of better local-federal relations. There's a whole lot of collaborative groups, local groups, local ranchers, local miners, loggers, getting together with the federal agencies to do endangered species planning, for example. The recent sage-grouse decision was an example of that, and I think that's what we're going to see more of in the future.
Well, we'll hope it stays nonviolent in Burns, outside of Burns, and we'll hope for more talking and less gun-toting down the road, people really listening to one another. Phil Brick in Walla Walla, Washington at Whitman College there. Thank you very much for being with us today, Phil.
Thank you, Tom.
And Dave Schanzer, director of the Triangle Center on Terrorism and Homeland Security at Duke University, with us today from Durham, North Carolina. Dave, thanks to you as well for joining us today.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for all your input today. It's always great to have you out and reporting in from wherever it's happening, and it really does happen. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.